Hey everyone, my name is Nadia and we're back. I know it's been quite some time, but we're back with another episode and I'm back. Why am I saying we? I'm back and I hope you enjoy this new episode. We're going to be looking at really one of my favorite occupations, which is actually my dream occupation, which is adolescent medicine specialist. And I hope you really learn something from this. I hope it also inspires you to go after your dreams and be all you want to be. So let's get right into the episode. So let's get started. So who is an adolescent medicine specialist, you might ask? Well, the occupation of adolescent medicine is a subspecialty within the specialty of pediatrics in the medical field. So basically it's like a really, really special doctor that works in the medical field. The job entails treatment and care for young children, specifically teenagers, as they progress into adulthood. Their age range is from 12 to 21 years old. The issues and scenarios that adolescent medicine specialists face can vary from health behaviors to behavior problems. They tend to also perform medical and psychological health screenings, which can include physical exams, sexually transmitted infections and diseases, eating disorders, and substance abuse. See, teenagers face several changes throughout these years, such as eating disorders, as I previously mentioned, problems at school or at home, peer pressure, and other kinds of challenges which they're trying to figure out. So the life of an adolescent medicine specialist can be very consuming, as it is important to provide a place of safety for the young person to confide in, so one must be trustworthy and have attentive listening skills in addition to the required medical knowledge and advice. So pediatrics, specifically adolescent medicine, has a really special place in my life because I really know what it's like to be scared as a child who's basically genuinely frightened about being in the hospital or even going to the doctor's office. You know, in my life, I've had 4 surgeries performed on my eyes, and my first one was done when I was 4 years old. The most recent one was done when March 2018. So I have a condition, it's called exotropia, and my eyes don't really focus well. So, well, it has become better by God's grace, but at any given moment, it could look like one of my eyes or both my eyes have drifted off to the side. So growing up, I couldn't tell when this occurred. So classmates would laugh and say, "Who are you looking at?" You know, when I was talking or speaking to them. This is one of the points where I really lost self-confidence, besides other issues around that time. You know, whenever my parents and I attended appointments or discussed the possibility of more surgery, the doctors, both in on surgery, made the point to make me feel comfortable as best as they could, knowing that this is a really young girl who's trying to figure out what's going on, but she can't really understand the full extent of it. My parents were significant support and cheerleaders during these tough times, and I can say it helped a lot to know that there were people who were really in my corner and who cared about me when no one else, or at least it felt like no one else did. Even in my current stage as a teen, I'm very particular about my self-image because of what I've experienced in my childhood, and my family doctor makes it really comfortable for me to really talk about it and make myself accessible to talk about pretty much anything I may be going through, medically related or not. And given all this, I really wanted to be that person for somebody else. I wanted to be an inspiration to somebody. I wanted to help children also realize that it's not as bad as it seems. I mean, at that age, that's all you think about, but I want to be that person that they know that they can get through it, and that no matter how scary it might be, I can show them that they can get through it, and that they have somebody in their corner who is trying to make sure that they get the best care and that they live their life to the fullest. So now let's talk about why adolescent medicine specialists is important to our society. You see, society seems to rush young people to be adults more quickly than we realize. Growing up as a teen myself, I realized that sometimes all you want to do is for somebody to hear you out and just to vent. To teens, at times, adults don't understand them. It feels like really nobody cares. As a adults and specialists, I think it's part of the occupation to be a helping guide through these troubling and confusing time in a young person's life. They're very essential because if there's an issue and the teen doesn't want to speak with her parents or his parents or a school authority, they must know that these specialists or these physicians are a trusted person that they can go to. In addition to that, adolescence is a time where the teens are now learning about their medical history and other things pertaining to their healthcare. So it's crucial that there's somebody who can take the time to break it down. I repeat, break it down and explain things to them so that they fully grasp what's going on within their body. And adolescent medicine specialists don't just deal with the physical self, but also play a substantial role in their emotional and mental well-being. And you know, with the rise of mental health issues in our country today, especially during this pandemic, teens must feel comfortable expressing themselves in a safe environment. So with that in mind, it tends, in an adolescent medicine clinic, it tends to be more friendlier and more warmer compared to being in a room full of crying toddlers, making it more age appropriate. Now, according to the World Health Organization, investing in adolescent healthcare in teens also has economic benefits. Investing and reinforcing positive behaviors such as having a regular sleep pattern, having very good eating habits, and the early detection of conditions and or illnesses can lead to a large decline in mortality and fertility rates, which can greatly speed up the growth of a country. Now, in some countries, this can even lower or even break the cycle of poverty and disadvantage persons in the society. Taking a focused interest in the well-being of teens will be beneficial not just in their current stage of life, but also for their future and the future of the next generation. In addition to this, a new study done by the United Nations Population Fund shows that investments in the health, education, human and wealth of young people have the potential not only to improve their well-being and health, but such investments also have significant impacts in regions of like sub-Saharan Africa, which can realize an economic boom estimated to as much as $500 billion a year for 30 years. I mean, there's an international lack of resources that are targeted towards adolescent health as it is, which is why there's such a heavy burden right now to increase the amount of resources allocated to research and health services around the globe. There's a certain drive and passion that young people bring to society, and if they are given the right tools of success, it will be a continuous cycle of sharing basic knowledge about this specialty. In summary, the NBCI gave a quick outlook of the work that's on the ground pertaining to adolescent medicine. It says, adolescents represent a significant opportunity for many youth to feel empowered and learn important skills such as negotiating personal relationships and developing independence. But at the same time too, this period of emerging autonomy exposes young people's vulnerabilities that can have a significant impact on their future health. Now, as it pertains to the course content of the grade 12 biology course, the topics of biochemistry when we're looking at macromolecules and enzymes and homeostasis are very relevant to this occupation. Within the biochemistry unit, macromolecules such as carbohydrates and proteins are discussed. I think being knowledgeable about these topics will help when a teen comes with questions about dieting and losing/gaining weight. This also correlates with the physiological aspect of self-image in the teen. For example, when a teen inquires about going on a low-carbohydrate diet, the specialist can bring up the fact that the carbohydrate provides energy for the various parts of your body when turned into the sugar molecule glucose. Another diet may lead to a dramatic decrease in energy, and another factor at play which can cause a person to become very sick. When looking at lipids, teens are always watching what type of fat, saturated or unsaturated, they consume in order to maintain the slim body figure and making sure they only consume healthy foods. This other topic of homeostasis deals with the nervous system and urinary system. It is seen that in the nervous system during adolescence, there's a creation of an abundance in myelin, which is a white fatty substance. The neurons in the brain are enclosed with the myelin, which helps communicate information faster and more often and more often than other brain cells. During this time, the prefrontal cortex is not fully developed, so teens depend on the amygdala to process information while their limbic system is used to control and process their emotions, which matures earlier than the prefrontal cortex. This would help one explain to the young person why they're experiencing all the mood changes, feeling overwhelmed with the various decisions that are coming their way, misinterpreting things, and acting on impulse. In the endocrine system, metabolic control plays a huge role. For example, the human growth hormone is secreted by the anterior pituitary and is controlled by the hypothalamus. It's also stimulated by your sleep, so specialists can use this to explain to the young person the importance of a good night's sleep to maximize growth, as teens tend to like to stay up late. Finally, when dealing with teens, I think one of the major struggles that adolescent medical specialists will have to overcome is making sure the child has the most informed decision possible. As a professional, the teens have the unique opportunity where they can voice out their opinions and make their own decisions, of course with the guidance of their parents. But ultimately, it is the teen's choice. There may be times where one may wish that they could just choose for the teen, but learning how to be a well-adjusted adult is part of growing up. Also, having to deal with a child that's experiencing racism in their life and not knowing what the right steps to handle the situation are. It's no secret that someone's family may have more obstacles than others, unfortunately, due to their background or due to their heritage. So as a medical professional, I would think it might be very difficult ensuring that the child that they're caring for is as competent as another child, despite any physical challenges or differences. This also applies to children with physical and physiological disabilities. Now, in the Catholic faith, there's a call for every person to respect the rights of life and human decency. No one should ever be treated better than anyone else because we're all God's creation. So we should treat each other with the respect and honor in any capacity we hold. In this case, the specialist must ensure that he or she is given the best care that can be provided to every teen that comes through their doors. Another ethical issue would be the type of medication that's prescribed to a teen and how it will affect the teen in the years to come. I think the decision of giving a 16-year-old low doses of an opioid, for example, morphine, to relieve pain would be difficult, as it easily can become a root of addiction in a couple of months if the proper precautions and monitors is not advised and followed. This can also lead to the issue of consent and confidentiality. In most countries and places around the world, there's a rule of patient-to-doctor confidentiality, where the doctor is only allowed to disclose patient information in the event of extreme and exceptional circumstances. The CMA, also known as the Canadian Medical Association, quote says, in quotes, "Disclosing your patient's personal health information to third parties only with their consent or as provided for by the law, such as when the maintenance of confidentiality would result in a significant risk of substantial harm to others, or in the case of incompetent patients, to the patient themselves," end quote. In the citations of teens, this is even harder because the teen is very reliant on the factor of trust between the physician and himself or herself. So there's an internal conflict within the physician of, well, do I do my job and report this, or do I try to handle it by myself and hope that the team will listen to my advice and go on the straight and narrow? But also, in our Catholic faith, it's important to put those who are vulnerable and poor as our priority. Now, this can also be interpreted as poor in spirit. You know, if there's a patient that feels lonely, powerless, and not worthy of living, I believe it's the mandate of the adolescent medicine specialist to lift that teen up and show them the value of life, and that whatever they're going through can be overcome by perseverance and strength from the community. Well, that's it, everyone, for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you learned something new, and I hope it opened your eyes to another occupation that you can possibly consider within the field of biology. Till next time, it was nice having a chat with you. My name is Namnia Barnes. See you.